two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome into the Jazz Notes Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. Big thanks to everyone tuning in. Welcome to any new listeners we have. If you've heard me on KSL News Radio recently and decided to come over and listen to the full podcast, we appreciate you jumping on with us. As always, you can read me at kslsports.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. Subscribe and like us in the iTunes store. We appreciate that if you would like to do that. I like to do these podcasts with Sarah Todd from the Deseret News. She also covers the Utah Jazz. You can find her coverage at Deseret.com. You can find her on Twitter at NBA Sarah. Sarah, thanks again for jumping on.
Yeah, no problem.
We last talked, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and the Jazz had played a couple of scrimmages and were getting ready for their seeding games and just getting into it. How have these first, I mean, we're seven seeding games in now. They've only got one left. How have the seeding games gone for you compared to what you expected from a Jazz perspective?
I don't think that I expected them particularly to rest guys as much or to, like blatantly tank a game. And so with that in mind, I kind of expected them to like really ramp up to the playoffs. And so we'd see a lot more of the starters and hopefully a lot more cohesion. And instead it's been like a lot of experimentation. And so I think that that's where things have really differed for me. And because they've been doing a lot of experimenting, it's really been up and down and it's hard to really evaluate what they are.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. They went really hard in the scrimmages. They were playing their starters and guys were playing 25 and 30 minutes. I mean, I know Mike Conley ended up down around, you know, 15 to 20 minutes a game, but they were really playing hard in those games. And they were doing some of the experimentation that you're talking about now that I thought they were going to be doing in the scrimmage games. So that really surprised me. And then, as you said, like they were playing hard, they were winning games, and then they randomly sat a bunch of guys against San Antonio. And it wasn't random. It was certainly by design. And then they tried to beat Denver because they played Donovan Mitchell for 40 minutes in that game or 47 minutes in that game. And then he sat again. And they obviously, they didn't try to lose that game against San Antonio, or I should say yesterday against Dallas. They mandated that they lost that game. I mean, they blew a 21-point lead on purpose. As soon as it got that high, they pulled George Niang out of the game because George Niang was too good for the Spurs. And that's an indictment on San Antonio, and it reveals how badly the Jazz were trying to lose that game.
Yeah, I mean, when you come out in the second half and you're just like, we're going to start our six best rotational players. We're not even going to play them at all in the second half. And then you still have a huge lead. And they're like, okay, now we have to take Niang out. And they kept like plugging random guys in at very weird intervals within the quarters. And really for no other reason, just to like, I guess, get bad looks.
And I mean, the guys that they're playing, I think there's a good excuse to be playing them, that Quinn Snyder is saying, hey, we got to develop a bench. We got to figure out who these guys are, because without Bojan Bogdanovic now in the bubble and in these playoff games, there probably is going to be a situation where you need a specific defensive body to match up with a Michael Porter Jr. or PJ Dozier or, you know, the weird niche guys that are going to be, not that Michael Porter Jr. is a niche guy, but you kind of have to worry about those individual matchups on a, under a much bigger or more powerful microscope over a seven-game playoff series. And you can't just say, well, we're going to play our normal rotation. You have to make weird adjustments. Every team does it. The Jazz in the past have gone to Boris Diaw or Joe Johnson famously against the Los Angeles Clippers when they had used him, but certainly not as heavily as they used him in the playoffs. They just realized that's a matchup that worked. So I get what Quinn Snyder's doing that. I also think he absolutely recognizes their tanking. He even said the Jazz in years past, and he's talking about Portland and Denver last year, were very strongly impacted in their playoff seeding, having to play the Rockets after Denver and Portland purposely lost games, tried to win games that nobody else was playing in. The Jazz are just playing the game that I do think is laid out in front of them and has been set up not by them, but is a part of the league now. Is it ethical to do this? Do you believe in sports ethics?
I guess to a certain point, but I think that what the Jazz doing are really the smartest plan for them. You know, like, it's not just about avoiding the Rockets because it's a tough matchup, because these are all going to be tough matchups. It's avoiding the Rockets because we've seen it play out already for however many seasons continuously, you know, and it's, I mean, that's not just good for the players to get a different look in the playoffs and play against a different team and have different experience, but it's also good for the fans. Like, I don't think that there's many people that would be listening to this that want to watch a series between the Jazz and the Rockets again. That's just not compelling basketball year in and year out, because it's not like they're doing it in the Western Conference Finals every year. It's not like a hot rivalry. It's just like a team that continues to beat them.
And, you know, your job is to win a championship. Your job isn't to win 70 regular season games. Your goal every year, and I think your hope every year, is to win in the playoffs. It's not just win in the regular season. And you can justify, I think, that if this is going to give you a better opportunity to win in the playoffs, it's better to do this in the regular season and setting yourself up to have success to get there, which is what Portland did last year, which is why they reached the Western Conference Finals. Is logical, and it makes sense, and it makes the team more money, and it allows guys to stick around in the league longer and allows coaches to have their jobs. So I get it. I really do understand what the Jazz are doing. I understand equally why fans are confused by it or think it's painful. It's a new variation to the NBA, and I think there's probably something the league will try and do a change about it in the future to make sure that it doesn't become so blatant, because if you're doing it with 3 games left, 4 games left, teams are going to start doing it with 10 games left. You know, I know there's only so much you can control, but teams will start saying, hey, we can figure out some of these issues a little bit later because other teams are going to be tanking. Why don't we tank game 70 and then we'll fix it in game 81? I do think we will start to see that more, and the league is going to try and make adjustments to fix it.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where maybe my ethical line is drawn a little bit, is like, how far do we let it go? Because it's not like the Jazz are tanking to like game the system and gain like long-term effects, or like, you know, like we've seen other teams do to like tank to get, you know, draft prospects.
Sure.
It's not like that. They're just trying to like change their playoff seeding, and they're doing it in the last few games of the regular season. That, I think, that's really strategic, and it's actually something that I like. I enjoy watching it happen.
Yeah.
I wish that they could be honest about it, because it's weird when you know, try to talk to these guys. No one's going to admit, like, yeah, we blew that game on purpose. We don't want to face the Rockets. People aren't going to say that, but that's definitely what's at play.
Yeah, and I guess hopefully Denver recognizes that the Jazz are trying to play them, and they take it personally, and the Jazz understand that they're building this, you know, this design to get up here and play Denver. And I hope both teams react and say, this is what we both wanted, or Denver feels slighted by the Jazz that they wanted to play them, and it increases the quality of play. I do think that would be an absolutely fantastic series. I think fans are going to be rewarded with that series. After some of the results today, including Houston losing to the San Antonio Spurs, I think you're almost guaranteed that series now between the Jazz and the Nuggets in the first round. And personally, just a quick preview, and we'll have to do it more heavily this weekend, I think it's going to be a really good series. I mean, I think those are two teams that actually match up pretty well, and it is the Jazz' best opportunity to advance out of the first round.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it in the game the other night. I mean, double overtime and just what was a regular season matchup. So imagine these guys playing a 7-game series. I can't wait. I love when you get to play a series like that against a team that you match up really well against, and seeing, because then you get to see really what the coaches are made of and the adjustments that they make game to game. And that's always a really interesting chess match, and I'd really be looking forward to it. It's also, it's really unfortunate, though, that this is happening, you know, in this bubble situation, that we're not able to see it. You know, kind of this inter-Mountain City Denver-Utah series would be really great for the fans.
I also think what's cool about it is that both of these teams have traditionally gotten advantages, I mean, throughout the regular season and in the postseason, of playing at altitude, and neither of them has that. So it fits that they get to play each other. You know, that I guess is a great equalizer, that you're not getting this home court advantage by playing in the thinner air. I think that's good. It's unfortunate the Jazz don't have Bojan Bogdanovic, because you look at the matchups right now, and Jamal Murray, Donovan Mitchell is good, or you can say Gary Harris, Donovan Mitchell, if Gary Harris comes back, and Jamal Murray, Mike Conley is good. And of course, Nikola Jokic and Rudy Gobert are, what, two of the three best centers in the NBA, two of the four best centers in the NBA. It would be awesome if you had Bojan Bogdanovic versus future Bojan Bogdanovic, who's, you know, Michael Porter Jr., who I think is this hybrid of what these guys are going to look like going forward. As good as Bojan is, he's already less versatile, I think, than Michael Porter Jr. is going to be. And he's going to be what that kind of modern future 3-4 looks like, the way Bojan is today. Having those two going back-to-back and having these crazy shooting performances, I think would be really fun, and would make maybe the best, or, you know, arguably the best first-round series we're going to see. But without Bojan Bogdanovic, I think the Jazz know they have a very steep uphill climb.
Yeah, the margin for error is so thin here. And like you said, there's without a doubt, we're going to see a situation where maybe like Royce gets into foul trouble or somebody else gets into foul trouble, and you're going to have to call upon one of those guys that they've been looking at, like Darrell Brantley, to come into the game and play a few spot minutes. And that is an incredibly good matchup to have to play those spot minutes as far as experience goes. And I don't think that I'm like, you know, doing any hot take or breaking any news by saying, like, I don't think that the Jazz are going to go far in the playoffs this year. I mean, they just don't have the personnel, and especially without Bojan, it's not really in the cards for them. But, and so if you're looking at this from an experience perspective, this is such a valuable matchup.
So let's talk about the three young guys on the Jazz, and the three young guys I'm talking about are Rajon Tucker, Mie Ioane, and Jarrell Brantley. They're the guys that have gotten the majority of extra playing time. Unfortunately for Juwan Morgan, he got hurt. He hurt his knee, was listed as probable, and then got pulled out of the game against the Spurs. I suspect we won't see him unless the Jazz end up in a weird small ball matchup somehow, and it just doesn't look like that's going to happen. I don't see Juwan Morgan being effective against Nikola Jokic or Plumlee or any of the big guys that Denver's probably going to play if the Jazz meet up. So I don't think you're going to see him very much. It's going to be Tony Bradley. It's going to be Rudy Gobert, obviously. So let's talk about the other guys. Rajon Tucker is funny. He's gotten the majority of the minutes for the Jazz as far as these rookies go throughout the season after they waived Jeff Green. I also think he might have the least clear future for me as far as what he develops into. Mie Ioane was maybe the least talked about of all these guys, and actually does a lot of things that I think there's a role for in the modern NBA. And then Jarrell Brantley, in my opinion, is the most tantalizing of these three prospects.
Yeah, I think that Jarrell Brantley for me is like, I think he's the most talented as far as versatility goes, because he's very good defensively and he can play against multiple positions. And so that's something that every team is always looking for. And so it makes him, his value a lot higher than some of the other guys. I mean, Mie Ioane is also versatile, but he has a much smaller frame. And so like the frame and build and athleticism of Brantley makes him, you know, like you said, more tantalizing as far as that goes. And then the fact that all of those guys can play inside and out and shoot, that's also great.
Yeah, I think breaking him down a little bit further, let's start with Mie. He's kind of the traditional 3-and-D that we've talked about in the NBA, which goes back maybe 10 years. It feels like this really started to pick up steam, or maybe it's a little bit longer than that. But the guys who are long and lanky and can switch the one, the two, and occasionally the three, and then certainly hit the three on the other end. And I think Mie Ioane's done that. I think you see it very clearly what kind of his defined role is in the NBA, and we've seen that for a decade. And while that's been a thing, and while that's been a kind of clearly defined role, even those guys are evolving and they have to do a little bit more. Even Royce O'Neal has to be more of a playmaker. You know, he has to attack off the off of a hard closeout and then kick to the corner or be able to finish at the rim. And I think we're still waiting to see that development from Mie Ioane. But I do think that has to be his next step if he wants to be a long-term player, unless he can shoot 43% from the three-point line. And so much of these guys' future is going to come down to whether or not they can shoot the three.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of that development that you're talking about, where like you have to be able to play make and drive and like penetrate well and be able to get to the rim and play through contact, that has a lot to do with their body makeup. And so you see a lot of these guys coming into the league like Mie that have sort of his frame and skill set. And if they don't bulk up a little bit, they end up being, you know, a little bit too small, not in height, but in sort of stature to be able to do those things. And so I think just with age, time, and, you know, more time in the weight room, that he'll be able to do that.
And then talk about the evolution of 3-and-D players. We used to think, well, three-point shooters are wings or are guards. And now it's guys like Jarrell Brantley. And maybe he's the modern 3-and-D player because he can guard fours and fives. I think he's going to have to potentially play if the Jazz face Michael Porter Jr. And it looks like he's going off, because you're going to need a guy who can step in there and move his feet. And that's one thing Jarrell can absolutely do. He's really nimble for a guy his size. But then he's also been somewhat consistent hitting three-point shots, and he's willing to take them, which I think is a really good sign, because Juwan Morgan gets open looks, Tony Bradley gets open looks, and they'll just hold on to the ball and they'll look to pass first. I like that Jarrell Brantley says, hey, the best thing I can do at times is shoot, and I'm confident I can hit it.
Yeah, that's the thing. He has a really nice shot form, and he doesn't hesitate. We see a lot of these young guys, I mean, even some of the regular rotational players on the Jazz, they're a little bit hesitant to shoot sometimes.
Joe Ingles.
Yeah, Joe Ingles. But the young guys, I mean, it's like when they get their minutes sort of in garbage time during the regular season, they will just fire them off like crazy because they're just wanting to kind of make that offensive impact as soon as they can. But in these games, it seems like they've been just trying to do the right thing almost to a fault. And so some of them have been more hesitant from the three-point line. But Jarrell looks really comfortable, really confident, as he said. And, you know, it's interesting, like in the Jazz's lineup through these seeding games, he actually has the fifth best defensive rating. Now that's a little bit skewed because a lot of those minutes have come against like also the second, third strings of other teams. But he has had spot minutes where like Royce got into foul trouble and he had to come in and guard his guy. And so some of that defensive rating is actually well put.
And what's hard to judge about these guys is that, you know, you look at Jarrell last night against Dallas and he had a minus 26 in his whatever 18 minutes on the floor, however many minutes he ended up playing. Well, the Jazz were trying to lose that game, so they didn't really give him a chance. And Jarrell would look better if he had Rudy Gobert next to him and Donovan Mitchell in the backcourt and Mike Conley. And he was just kind of spacing the floor when they said, well, Donovan's the number one takeaway, or Rudy's lob's the number one takeaway, and then Donovan's number two, and then Mike Conley's three, and Joe Ingles is four. And you have to dedicate at least one body to all those guys at all times. And if it's a pick and roll with Rudy and Don, you have to chip from the corner, and you have to bring down that corner three-point shooter. Well, if you put Jarrell over in that corner, and he can hit that shot at 40%, he becomes a really good player. It becomes a really interesting player. And he's just not getting that opportunity with the starters right now. And again, you may have to play him because the Jazz are so small. And if you end up with Denver in the first round, Denver is so big, it's insane watching him play. You have to have Jarrell Brantley on the floor, or you have to have a big guy on the floor when Royce O'Neal comes off the floor. And that probably has to be Jarrell at this point. So you may see his development look even better, even in the postseason, which is crazy to say for a rookie who's on a two-way deal. But that opportunity honestly might be there for him. And right now, and watch this, Jazz fans, when you watch the next time the Jazz kind of really play, and maybe it's going to be weird now because it's the postseason and every possession is treated differently, watch how much playmaking Royce O'Neal does in the first quarter. It's because he's playing with the starters, and the absolute game plan is let Royce O'Neal beat us. Don't let Joe, Donovan, Rudy, or anybody else, Mike Conley, beat you. Let Royce O'Neal beat you. And so Royce gets all these opportunities to get wide open threes or attack closeouts and get dunks or get kickouts. It's because that's the scouting plan, for sure. You might get to see Jarrell Brantley actually excel in that situation if he's the odd man out in the game plan for the opposing team, where he could get a bunch of open looks.
Yeah, and it's so clear that, you know, Royce is always fifth on the scouting report. Because
right,
like you said, right, in the first quarter, I think if we go back and look, I mean, his first quarter scoring numbers are probably wildly larger. And that speaks to not only the scouting report, but also the adjustments that they make. And then when they start actually going after, this is why we see Royce O'Neal end up in foul trouble, because he becomes a problem that they have to adjust to, and they make him play through that contact, and then he gets into foul trouble. And so it's really clear, and it opens up an opportunity, which is, this is the biggest opportunity that Jarrell Brantley could have, because had it not been for like the pandemic and the bubble, on a two-way contract, he wouldn't even be allowed to play in the playoffs. And now he is, if he's put on like that night's active roster. And so I'm sure that when they're going through their active guys for the night, that he's going to be one of the guys on there because they do expect that situation to happen.
So that's going to be fun to watch. I think that's going to be exciting to watch. We've talked about Mie. We talked about Jarrell. Let's talk about Rajon, because I don't know exactly what I feel about Rajon Tucker at this moment, because he does some things that are awesome. We talked about Mie's body and how much work it needs. Rajon Tucker doesn't need more work on his body. And that doesn't mean the Jazz aren't going to work on it, but he has a freakish NBA body already to team with his athleticism. He has a quick step. It's so quick. He travels a lot. He's got to figure out kind of the timing of that first dribble move with his false step. That's all stuff he's got to work on, and the Jazz can work on it with him. He's probably worth developing it. But if he can hit threes at all, and right now he can't, but if he can hit threes at all, he becomes really interesting, because then you can't leave him all alone. And if you guard him, he's so dangerous attacking the rim because he tries to murder every single person in front of him at the rim. And as a result, he gets a ton of free throws. And you want free throws. He has a free throw rate right now of 0.58. And to give you a sense of what that is, Donovan Mitchell's is like 0.24. So he's going to the free throw line in his minutes twice as often as Donovan Mitchell on his shot attempts. It's an awesome number, and it's a way to get really efficient scoring out of a guy who's not shooting right now. And if you can add shooting, it becomes even better. But he still makes so many weird mistakes on the floor.
Yeah, I think that part of the problem that I see with Rajon is that it's like he plays a little bit of the style that Emmanuel Mudiay does, where it's just like way too fast all the time. He doesn't know how to stop, and he doesn't need to do that. Like Emmanuel, well, neither of them do, but Rajon really doesn't, because he has that athleticism. Like he could really pick apart a defense and use that to his advantage, and possibly even get to the free throw line more if he would just have a little bit more patience and not make some of those little mistakes. But it's just like, it feels like he's playing G League ball still, where he's just like constantly gunning.
Yeah, he puts his head down and he says, how do I score? How do I dribble? Yeah. And how do I score? And I mean, I wrote about this at kslsports.com. He needs to think, how do I pass? Where do I pass the ball to? And I put out the stat that he was the only player in the NBA to play more than 100 minutes this season to have fewer than three assists, and or three assists or fewer. He added another assist last night in whatever 20 minutes that he played, which is not a great number still, but I get it. He's not playing with great talent around him. But yeah, that he still tries to go G League superstar, and he needs to be Royce O'Neal light. And it's just not what he's doing right now. And I do think that's his pathway to getting on the floor. And then once he gets that opportunity, that's when you can start developing those other parts of your game. But you have to have a reason to be on the floor. And we talked about Jarrell Brantley's size and nimble feet might give the reason to Jazz to put him on the floor just for that one skill alone. And then once he's there, he can develop shooting threes, show off as a passer, show off as a playmaker, show off as a rebound and go guy. But he's not going to do that first off. I think Rajon's trying to do all of those things right away, and the Jazz don't need it.
Yeah, and I think like what you said, it would be really, really valuable for these guys to watch a ton of Royce O'Neal film, or I mean, just pick apart his brain as best that they could, because like what Royce does, it's like he very quietly plays good basketball every night. And if they could learn to do that, to just, you know, cut down on the mistakes, do the right things, and then shoot when they're open, or use their body and penetrate a lane when it's open to them, or even play through contact the way that Royce does it, that would be great, especially for Jarrell and Rajon. And then, you know, Mie, I mean, I think he's really well built for the NBA. It's just, you know, I think time and experience for him.
Yeah, and I don't think that wasn't part of the plan when you drafted him. I mean, I don't think the Jazz drafted him as a guy that they thought was going to come in and play right away and make a difference. And I think that's okay. I think the Jazz have been smart about some of their long-term game plans with these guys and saying it's worth investing 12 months, 24 months. Tony Bradley's case, it was really almost 3 years that they kind of put into his development. And he was a freshman and didn't play a lot at North Carolina when they drafted him in the first round. But they're putting in 2.5, 3 years with these guys. And now Tony Bradley's kind of slowly starting to pay off on some of that balance. And maybe he doesn't end up anything more than a backup center, but it's probably an okay investment for how little money you've put into them. And Rajon Tucker's on a minimum contract. Jarrell Brantley's on a two-way contract. Mie Oni's on a minimum contract. Those are all smart investments for a basketball team like the Jazz, who have a lot of money allocated to four players.
Yeah, exactly. And they're going to have even more money allocated here coming in the next couple of years. And so to have those guys that they could develop and could potentially be two, like, you know, defense and offensive guys, two-way, not two-way the contract. It's so valuable and it's so smart, but they have to, the problem is that the development that they get in the G League is not ever going to equal the development they can get in the NBA. And so it's not so much about their talent or their skill level. It's just going to depend on the opportunities they get to actually break into the rotation. And that can really be hard in the NBA. So it's just, that might depend on an injury or a unique circumstance.
Yeah. And good for the Jazz for having that patience. Good for finding the types of guys that I think are comfortable probably surviving in that spot or existing in that spot. That's probably beneficial for the Jazz long term. And if those guys can have that mindset and be patient, which I'm sure is extraordinarily hard to do, especially when you're Jarrell Brantley and you're not making very much money. You know, your per diem is a huge part of your salary still, I think, to this day. If he's willing to sit with it and not try and go overseas and play and make a little bit more money, it'll benefit the Jazz in the long term. All right, let's go big picture NBA really quickly. What have you liked about the bubble, or what are you excited about the playoff series? We kind of have an idea of what the West is going to look like a little bit. I think you're going to get Clippers and Mavericks. I think you're going to get Jazz and Denver, and I think you're going to get OKC and Houston. What are we going to see with the 1 seed and the 8 seed? Is it going to be Phoenix? Are they going to sneak up and steal this thing after having the 13th seed going into the bubble?
Oh, man. I love watching. I have the Phoenix Sixers game on right now, and I love watching them in the bubble. It's insane that they came in and it was like, oh, you're the charity case. You're here so that we can get Zion and not make it look weird. Like, they were the charity case of the bubble from yeah. reputation, and they're undefeated as of right now. they're playing out of their minds, and I mean, Devin Booker's hitting game winners in front of Paul George's face, and I just love it. And while I would really enjoy watching probably the Blazers and the Lakers play more than any other team, I think that Phoenix has been so deserving with the way that they've played through the bubble. So it's a really interesting thing that's going to happen. I'm looking forward to the play-in tournament, actually.
I'm not convinced that Portland would give the Lakers a better series than Phoenix at this point. I get that Dame is different and he's had all these crazy series, and I don't believe Devin Booker is on par with Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
But Devin Booker is playing at an unbelievable level right now. He's playing at a truly, you know, the Shams earlier today announced that the NBA is going to be doing all NBA bubble teams, you know, in the bubble MVP. Is it not Devin Booker right now if they go undefeated and get into the play-in game? Like, doesn't Devin Booker mixed with performance plus team accomplishment, doesn't that probably mean something as far as what his MVP case would be?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to argue against it. I think the other two guys that would be in contention for bubble MVP would be Luka and TJ Warren. And TJ Warren's just been also out of his mind. And the Pacers, they went, let's see, I'm looking at it right now. The Pacers, they're 4-2 right now in the bubble. Yep. And, you know, while the Pacers are like one of the best defensive teams in the NBA, like they're not a team that like ever gets buzz, really. And TJ Warren, I mean, he scored 119 points in the first 3 games. And it's just, he's doing it efficiently, shooting like over 50%
right
from three with the least touches of any of the starters. So it's like, he's playing ridiculously, and then Luka's averaging a triple-double in the bubble, which is also crazy. But the fact that the Suns are undefeated out there, and it's not like they've been playing all of the weak teams. They're winning against good teams.
Going back to TJ Warren, they're doing it without Sabonis. He's hurt, you know, and is out. And I don't think Malcolm Brogdon played the first game, if I remember correctly. And so, yeah, they were winning all these games really based off of his performance. So it's going to be fun. I think it's smart the NBA is naming a bubble team. No Jazz players are going to be in contention. A, the Jazz have sat so many guys, they just haven't probably played enough games, and the Jazz haven't been particularly good in the bubble. And I don't think they're trying to win. I think they're trying to develop. I really do believe that aspect of Quinn Snyder, not Mione and Rajon Tucker specifically, but rotations with Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley and how to use different players. I think that's true. But as a result, the Jazz have not had these, for the most part, crazy statistical outputs.
Yeah, and I mean, and going back to what I was saying at the beginning, like, because they've been doing so many weird things during the season games, we don't really know what they're actually going to look like. I guess that the game against Denver is kind of the best look that we can say. Like, this is what they look like when they're on a good night with everyone playing. But even then, there were some weird things that happened. So,
well, that'll do it for us, Sarah. You can find her on Twitter at NBA Sarah, read her at Deseret.com. As always, thanks for listening to the Jazz Notes podcast. You can catch me now on KSL News Radio 4 times a day throughout the weekdays, getting you updated on the Jazz. So welcome again if that's where you heard me for the first time. You can find me on Twitter, Ben Anderson, at Ben's Hoops, and read me at KSLSports.com. Catch up again this weekend as we get you ready for the Jazz playoff matchup. It's Jazz Notes on KSLSports.com.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.